T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Kelly's one strike pitch. Swinging a fly ball, center field deep. Bellinger going back to the warning track, to the wall. It's a grand slam. Howie Kendrick has done it. They're going crazy in the Nationals dugout.
There's nothing like tension in an elimination game, and especially when you don't have a dog in the fight. It's all joy. But wow, how about those two matchups in the NLDS yesterday? Cardinals and Nationals moving on.
Well, there's no joy in Dodgerville today, I'll tell you what, because Clayton Kershaw has struck out. That guy is absolute just terrible when it comes to pitching in the postseason. I don't know that I remember a worse pitcher in the postseason in my lifetime than Clayton Kershaw. He is so good during the regular season, and then he gets into the playoffs, and his ERA is 2 runs per game higher than it is in the postseason.
Career ERA 2.44, which is ridiculous.
That's a
right?
great ERA in the regular season.
His postseason 4.33.
Yeah,
before last night, so it's probably higher than that now if they've updated after giving up the two bombs last night. Yeah, 4.43 now. 4.43. So just shy of 2 runs worse in the postseason. I mean, that would be so hard to have him on your team because you know he's just such a stud during the regular season. And then you're like, but what is going to happen in the postseason? And you saw it right in front of your eyes again last night. He's warming up at the bullpen. You get that anticipation like, oh, they're going to bring in their ace.
Right.
And then comes in and gives up not one but two jacks to tie the game.
Here's the pitch. He swings and belts one a deep right center field. Way back. Going. And gone. Goodbye. Halfway up the pavilion. A tremendous game. Tying. Home run by Juan Soto.
Nationals Radio Network on the call. That tied the game. And then eventually extra innings. And then a grand slam. And a winner for the Nationals, 7-3-10.
Yeah, and you look at that home run by Soto, and it was halfway up. Like, that was almost out of the ballpark. Yeah. If that's Wrigley Field, that thing's on to Waveland, man. That was a shot that went just far. And I mean, I don't think it still landed yet, but it's Clayton Kershaw, and it's the difference between being a big-game player and being a just player that's there for the regular season. And we see a lot of those guys in sports. I think Bryce Harper is trending to be that right now, too, because, you know, his Washington Nationals win last night, and he's in Philadelphia collecting his money, but he's not part of a winner. It's the first time that the Nationals in their 14-year history have advanced and won and moved on to the postseason. And that's the difference between people who can step up and win big. I mean, it really is right now the difference between Tom Brady and every other quarterback in football. He may not be the most exciting quarterback to watch. He doesn't put up the numbers that Patrick Mahomes puts up. He doesn't have the excitement that Deshaun Watson brings to the table. He doesn't run and play football like Lamar Jackson does. But the one thing that Tom Brady does is win. And I'll take Tom Brady on my team every single day. And that topic was rolling around yesterday on all of the sports shows nationally. If you have one game to win, who do you want? I want Tom Brady every single day under center if I've got one game to win because he is a big game player. I want Derek Jeter on my team because he is a big game player. I want big shot Bob Orry on my team because that guy hits big shots. I mean, you want guys on your team that have the ability to come up clutch, to come up big. I want Mariano Rivera on my team. I want Wade Davis. I want Kelvin Herrera. I want Luke Hochaver. I want guys like that. I want Greg Holland. I want guys that I know are going to come up big and make a difference and finish out games when it matters most and have ice water in their veins as opposed to guys who are great in the regular season. And Clayton Kershaw is an amazing regular season pitcher, but he doesn't have what it takes to be successful in the playoffs. And last night, giving up back-to-back home runs on back-to-back pitches That's the second time he's done that in the playoffs, Josh, and he's never done that in the regular season before. You have to have a different mindset when you play in big games. You have to have a different mindset when you play in the postseason, and Clayton Kershaw clearly doesn't have that mindset. I mean, it's a little reminiscent of Andy Reid. I mean, you brought it up earlier when we were talking. It's kind of like Andy Reid in the playoffs. I mean, Andy Reid does not have that ability to close out games, and Clayton Kershaw clearly does not have that ability to close out games in the postseason. And Clayton Kershaw, if I'm comparing him to a local player, it's kind of like Travis Kelce. When you need him to step up and be big, he's not really there for you. He's great when it's noon on a Sunday, but man, when the lights are bright and they're shining down and you need a big-time performance, boy, Clayton Kershaw goes into a shell. And, you know, Travis against New England has gone into a shell when the games matter most. You've got to go out there and make plays and do good things in moments when your team is counting on you, and that's what puts you over the edge of being a great player. Tom Brady isn't the best right now, as we said, at that quarterback position, but he's the best winner out there in the NFL and maybe the best winner we ever seen in sports, and that's why I'm taking Tom Brady every single day over a guy who's got stuff like Clayton Kershaw.
It would be hard to do, but if you're the Dodgers, you almost have, you can't keep going through this insanity, can you?
No, you can't. I'm moving forward. I'm leaving him off my postseason roster. I don't really care.
I'm dealing him.
Or trading him. Yeah, you got to do one or the other. Like, I think this is the offseason where you probably have to trade Clayton Kershaw. I think the Dodgers have seen enough. Their fans have seen enough. Everybody
and you'll still
has
get
seen
a
enough.
Lot for
and,
him.
And you'll get a lot in return for, you know, Clayton Kershaw. No question about it, because he's going to win you regular season games, and he's probably going to do enough to lead you to a postseason, if you will. Once that postseason rolls around, I'm stashing him in the bullpen, or I'm not putting him on my postseason roster because he just doesn't perform when it matters most, and that's what you have to do.
AL team. I'm trying to get him to the American League so he doesn't like come back to bite you. But yet, like, 2 more years at $31 million each sounds like a lot, but for an arm of that, you can get somebody to take that on, and you can get a big haul in return. I think I'd just go ahead and do it. It's like a definition of sanity.
Just keep
going through this over and over and over. The Andy song we play, you're never going to win with Andy.
Right.
You're never going to win with Clayton. Just put the words in there.
Sure.
He's a stud. He's a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, I do not want him on the hill in the playoffs.
But
He's just not a winner.
He's just not a winner. And I think those are the things you have to look at when you talk about players in baseball and football, whatever it is. Are they winners? And I think right now Clayton Kershaw, he's not a winner. He's a good baseball player. He's a great pitcher in the regular season. But when your team needs him most, man, he goes into a shell and just doesn't perform and doesn't have the ability to perform when the spotlight is on.
And it's not he's got a small body of work in the postseason anymore, too. He's pitched now in 32 games.
Yeah, 168 innings he has of postseason baseball. That's a season. That's a season's worth of postseason work.
It's there. It's evident.
Yeah, it's not one game or one pitch or something like that. Now, this is 168 innings of postseason baseball, and that equates to basically a year's worth of pitching. And you look at his numbers, and they are drastically worse than they are in the regular season. He is a very, 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 very poor postseason pitcher.
And then the other division series, Game 5, a first inning like this.
Swing and a smash past third. That's going to open the bases. It could clear the bases. One run in, two run in. They're going to stop the runner at third now, and the Cardinals lead 7-0.
I mean, it's a lot of runs to keep tally on.
Yeah. 10 runs in the first
Ten
inning.
10 in the first.
Most runs ever scored in one postseason inning. 10.
They scored 4, and I tweeted, game over, Cardinals. Cardinals are advancing. Game over. It's over. It's done. Four runs in the first inning. And then they just kept piling on.
Yeah, I turned it off at 4-0. I was listening to it in the car on the radio. I had a long drive yesterday from Overland Park to downtown, you know, that 30-minute drive or whatever it is. And I'm like, I'm going to listen to the baseball game. Put this thing on, listen to the baseball game a little bit. I got from like 119th in Quivira to 4:35
it was over,
and I flipped it off. It was over. I didn't even make it, you know, to the highway. And the thing was done. It was over. It was history. And the Cardinals are moving on to the NLCS. And now I'm the biggest Washington Nationals fan you'd ever seen this side of the Mississippi River. I'll tell you what, go Nats.
10-run frame, and it got me thinking. If I'm a Braves fan, one, if you were late, mm-hmm, and didn't get there,
right.
You turn the car around.
You leave. You don't pay for parking.
If you're there already, and you probably paid a pretty decent amount for those playoff tickets, do you also bolt?
You bolt. Yeah.
And I think you do. I think you get up and walk. One, I couldn't deal with the angst of that.
Right.
Like just stewing. Just stewing. I don't think I would have the hope of a comeback at that point. That inning was demoralizing.
Oh God, yes.
10 runs on 5 hits.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they walked the pitcher.
Yeah. The thing's over.
With the bases loaded.
You get up and go because you don't let that eat at you. You go about your day. And then if for some reason it's the greatest comeback ever, you have a fantastic story to tell.
Right.
I was the idiot that left that game.
Mm-hmm. Like I left that Kansas-Colorado game 10 years ago when Kansas made that huge comeback.
I would just wear it. I would be fine with wearing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like self-deprecating way. It'd be like, you have a great story either way. One, I wasn't putting up that bleep.
Right.
I was out of there. I don't care how much I bet. I was out of there. They weren't winning that game. That was awful because the atmosphere, I mean, just shuts down. There's mm-hmm. that ballpark's going to be empty or going to be so quiet. You know it is.
Yeah, sure.
That there's not a belief. They're like, oh my gosh, you're going to. Or you're the biggest dum-dum for leaving the ballpark and the greatest comeback ever in a postseason game. You got a story either way.
Either way.
Get out.
Get out. Go. Beat that Atlanta traffic and get the hell out of town. I mean, there's no reason to sit there and watch that thing in front of your eyes. I mean, it's 10-0 you haven't even batted yet. I mean, you're down 10-0. You haven't even taken to the plate yet. And so I think at that point in time, that was a good half inning. I'm out of here. I've got my money's worth today.
Yeah.
And you kind of did. You got your money's worth in the first half inning. I mean, you saw 10 runs scored. You saw the pitcher walk. You saw a pitching change.
You saw
a bunch of hits. I mean, what else did you need?
10 of the 14 runs. What more do you need?
What more do you want?
You got most of the picture in a half an inning.
You saw it.
You can go ahead and go.
You go to a bar and you don't have to pay $17 for a beer or anything like that.
Your mental health, that would be the best play.
Yeah, just enjoy the rest of the night and you know you're going into the offseason now. But we saw yesterday the Atlanta Braves, who are always in the postseason, the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are always in the postseason, fail to get to the World Series, fail to get to their championship round series. And to put that into a little perspective for folks who have been down on the Royals over the last couple of years because they have back-to-back 100 lost seasons, the Dodgers have failed in 31 years to do what the Royals did in the first 9 years of the Dayton Moore regime. The Dodgers have a $9 billion television deal, and I'm not making that up. That's a $9 billion television deal that they signed. You know, it was like a 20-year deal or whatever that they signed with whoever they're using right now for their television provider. A $9 billion with a B dollar television deal and a $200 million payroll. Think about that for a second. Their payroll is $200 million, and for the last 31 years, they have failed to win a championship, and the Royals accomplished that in 9 years under Dayton Moore in their first 9 years, taking over arguably the worst organization in professional sports. And Dayton Moore and his crew turned it around that fast. And so when you start to compare, you know, baseball and what the Royals have done over the last couple of years, and you're upset about that, and nobody's happy with those 100 lost seasons, you got to put it into perspective and realize still what the Royals did in 2014 and when they won it in 2015, the perspective that brings to you, because again, they did it in a sport that doesn't have a level playing field. They did it in a sport where they're automatically behind the eight ball, and they did it in a sport that favors these big market teams and gives them such a bigger opportunity to win. And to see the Royals do that in 14 and 15 is truly remarkable. And you have to continue to commend the work that Dayton Moore and his staff have done of putting that team together and winning that world championship. And hell, they may be back sooner rather than later, and they may be in the World Series again before the Los Angeles Dodgers are winning a championship. I mean, just what the Royals have done and the way that they did it is truly remarkable and truly amazing. And we have to keep that in perspective as you get mad during these last 200 lost seasons. It's not going to be that way forever. Stuff is going to change with this ball club. They are going to get back, and they're doing better than the LA Dodgers. Think about if you're a Dodger fan right now. We just spent $200 million on this payroll.
Again.
And our best pitcher making $30 million a year gives up back-to-back home runs on back-to-back pitches. Oh, man, you got to be mad if you're a Dodger fan today.
It feels like a long time ago since the old fist-pumping Kirk Gibson.
Yeah, it really does. 31 years, 1988.
Man. We check in on this week's foe. Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle tells us if the Texans can hand the Chiefs back-to-back losses. Next.
Fesco in the morning.
Chiefs and Texans coming up on Sunday, of course. A Arrowhead Pride tailgate, 5:20 on Sunday. No, that's not correct. That was last week, wasn't it? We haven't updated our board. Go ahead and erase that for me, Bob. Put the correct time up there. That's a noon game, so that would be a 10:30. 10:30. Let's go 10:30. 10? You're going to go 10? You're going to put them on at 10 o'clock? Okay, 10 o'clock. There we go. Arrowhead Pride tailgate at 10 o'clock. I just read it like Ron Burgundy at times.
Two hours before, Josh. Thanks for coming.
I thought it was 90 minutes. I didn't know. All right. We'll get you set. Just tune in on Sunday. We got shows all over the place on the weekends now.
Doing all right over there, Gramps?
You don't have to.
Well, 5:20 was 2 hours before the 7:20 kickoff last week.
So. I thought maybe we had something before that.
No, we're good.
What other programming?
Binkley's probably on somewhere.
I mean, somebody's on. I don't know. Somebody's on. All right, anyway. Let's try to promote the Arrowhead Pride tailgate. I can't do it.
Try again.
It'll be on at some point in time. The injury list is long. Patrick Mahomes says the injured ankle's sore, but okay. Chris Jones, Eric Fisher, Sammy Watkins, Andrew Wiley, Dorian O'Daniel all did not practice yesterday. Tyreek Hill, Anthony Hitchens, both listed as limited. And then they had a whole bunch of people full practicing. I don't know.
Cam Irving was listed on the injured list.
Everybody was on the injured list.
Maybe he won't play on Sunday.
No, wishful thinking.
I'm the king of that.
But will the Houston Texans run the blueprint, right? The blueprint. Do they pass it on from week to week now?
This blueprint is getting, like, insane, right? That's become the topic of the year for the Chiefs. Oh, the blueprint's out.
Did the Lions send it to the Colts? Will the Colts send it to the Texans? Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle.
Well, I think that they'll certainly watch the tape and try to do some things to contain Patrick Mahomes and limit the explosive plays. Obviously, he could be hobbled a little bit. And I think without his mobility, he's not, you know, exactly the same. I think that could be a factor. Also, Deshaun Watson comes in here on a hot streak, and one of the reasons he is because their pass protection improved. Now, blocking the Falcons and blocking Frank Clark, two very different things.
I don't know that we've seen the best J.J. Watt in the matchups with the Chiefs for kind of injury reasons. Are we seeing a pretty good version of J.J. Watt right now?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was a gross broken leg that one year, a couple years back. He's back from that, obviously, and had 16 sacks. I don't think that he's been as disruptive this year because they missed Jadeveon Clowney. It's essentially, with D.J. Reader sprinkling in some bull rushes, but it's just him and Whitney Merciless. So you don't really have three effective rushers. You've got two, and Whitney's on the other side from him. So there's not really a guy that occupies a block on his side or commands double team attention. JJ is still the guy being double teamed, but he still has four sacks. And, you know, he's impactful. He still defeats blocks pretty routinely and has a good burst to get to the quarterback and finish plays. Is he as fast as he was before all the injuries? No, I don't think that he is, but he's still very, very good and, you know, one of the best defensive players in NFL history. I think that, you know, injuries take a toll on everybody, and, you know, the ones he's had, the broken leg and the back stuff, yeah, that affects you. But, you know, I don't see any issues with him. He's not even on the injury report. He's very healthy, and he's grading pretty high. A guy that no one really talks about around the NFL is DJ Reader, their nose tackle, who's in the contract year. DJ also puts defensive end. He's got 2.5 sacks. It's a career high. And one thing he does is he kind of changes the line of scrimmage. He pushes people back. He's a load. He's 6'3", he's 347, very quick feet, and I think one of the better nose tackles in the NFL.
What are the things Aaron Wilson with the Houston Chronicle were talking with here on 610 Sports Radio that the Chiefs have not been able to do is obviously stop the run? Are the Texans good enough with Hyde and Duke Johnson in that duo and Deshaun Watson, I guess, in the mix as well? Are they good enough to run the football effectively against the Chiefs?
I think so. And what they've done so far, they have high average for carries. They have physical runs with Carlos Hyde. And then with Johnson, he's more of a slashing type of back, and they also get a fair amount of quarterback keepers, and that's a factor with Watson. He can take off and run and make his own play. What I think the Chiefs will have to do to win the game is they're going to have to make him uncomfortable because he was way too comfortable in the pocket. He had a perfect passer rating with 5 touchdowns against the Falcons. Dan Quinn's defensive scheme was pretty awful, and all they did was try to say, well, DeAndre Hopkins won't beat us. Well, they did nothing to account for Will Fuller. And you always remember from a few years ago, and they didn't win the game, but Fuller had a very good game against Kansas City. I think that he's capable of doing that again.
They didn't get pressure on Watson, but how well is he playing overall, and what's the next level for him as a quarterback?
Right. I think he's got to be more consistent. He's got to try to. He's been kind of like one good game and then one inconsistent game following that. So maybe the Kansas City Chiefs are getting him at the right time. But I think he figured out a few things in terms of speeding up his delivery. I think he has to continue on that arc and get the ball out of his hands. Last game was the fastest he's been, according to Next Gen stats, as far as getting the ball out. And it was like an average of 2.9 seconds. So he was making a quick read, a decision, and getting the ball out, and he's accurate. And that's kind of the way they've coached him to play in their vision for the offense, where he can throw the ball to a variety of people. They had three different receivers very involved in Kikuchi, DeAndre Hopkins, and Will Fuller got the most of the lion's share of the targets. And they did that without Kenny Stills. I don't know if Kenny, if he's back this week, if he'll be anywhere close to 100%. So they could give him another week and go with Kuti, who had a 51-yard catch this last game. And they've got a big red zone target in Darren Fells. He's 6'7", 270, and caught a couple of touchdowns last week. So, yeah, I mean, everything worked for them last week. So everything I'm talking about, it could be obsolete against the Chiefs, though. I don't think it's going to be certainly them scoring 53 points against the Kansas City defense. I think it'll be a closer game. And, you know, there's also the potential for a shootout with, you know, Patrick Mahomes with the controls. I could see that happening.
Are the Texans ready to beat the Chiefs? I felt like they've always been a good team, but just not ready to beat the Chiefs. Are they ready to beat the Chiefs in that level of competition?
I mean, we're going to find out. I think that they have that potential to. They showed me something when they won a pretty tough road game against the Chargers. I think that they've got to be more consistent to put that together. I think that they got a little satisfied with themselves, and a big theme for them already. And Bill O'Brien was kind of a killjoy as soon as the game ended with the guys, as far as, you know, turning the page and on to Kansas City, that kind of thing. So maybe that works. My sense is they're not like a cocky bunch and think that they're the greatest thing ever. I think that they're realistic about where they stand, that they have, even in the 53-32 game, they have to get better. And there were some lapses in coverage against Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones occasionally. There were some things that they could have done better. And, you know, for example, like Max Sharping, their rookie guard, he had three false starts, two in the red zone. So that kind of took points off the board when that happened. And in my opinion, yeah, they can play better than that. And I don't think the Falcons are very good at all.
Aaron Wilson, Houston Chronicle, and I don't think the Falcons are any good at all. This offense kind of scares me, Bob.
Yeah, it does.
I think their ability to, they have a pretty good, like, kind of 1-2 running attack that's going for them right now. You have the dynamic, you know, Deshaun Watson, who's playing awfully well, and then those two receivers, man, they're a handful.
They really are. I mean, this offense is very, very good. I mean, it's going to be, let's see what Frank Clark can do this week. I think he's going to be counted on very heavily to make plays on defense, especially with Chris Jones being out, with Anthony Hitchens being out, with Xavier Williams being out. Like, this is a game where Frank Clark should take over and own it, and he has to play big in order for, I think, the Chiefs to win this football game. I think it's going to be a very tough test. The thing that the Chiefs have going for them is they have Andy Reid. As bad as he was last week, Andy Reid is still by far the better head football coach, and I think he'll have his team ready to go more so than Bill O'Brien, and that's why I'm counting on Andy Reid and the Chiefs to win this football game, because they win the head coaching battle in this one. And I think when you can win the head coaching battle by as much as Andy Reid wins over Bill O'Brien, you're going to have the big decided advantage in this game. And I think Andy Reid's just going to out-scheme the Houston Texans.
Well, like last week, you had the Chiefs were flying high, pretty much Colts were down in the dumps.
Sure.
This week, now you got Houston's flying high, right? They got the Watson's the player of the week. They're kind of flying high. And you got the Chiefs kind of down in the dumps a little bit. So we'll see if the fortunes flip just like they did last week.
Yeah, and that's why I asked him, are the Texans ready to beat the Chiefs? Because we've seen that the Texans are the perfect 8-8, 9-7 football team. Really good, really bad. Really good, really bad. Like, there's just no consistency with the Houston Texans. And you have to think, coming off a win like that last week, where now everybody's talking about them as the great team in the NFL, they're due for a big slap in the face, and I think they get it this week from the Chiefs.
69306 on the Protein House Eat with a Purpose text line. We'll shout it out coming up in just a few minutes. Anything you'd like to discuss, and it sure sounds like it's happening. We'll tell you when. Next.
Fesco in the morning.
.69306 on the Protein House Eat with a Purpose text line. We will shout it out coming up in just a few minutes. Anything you would like to discuss, sports or otherwise, a lot of food usually, 69306, and we will chat about it coming up in just a few. But it sounds like it's happening, and it may be happening soon, at least The unveiling.
The unveiling could happen. Yeah, it could happen sooner rather than later. And of course, we're talking about a downtown baseball stadium, which is a reality now for Kansas City. It is going to happen. We are going to have a downtown baseball stadium, whether, Josh, you like it or not, whether I like it or not, whether Lou Gotz likes it or not, whether Kramer likes it or not, whether whoever likes it or not. It is happening in downtown Kansas City, and I was talking to some folks yesterday that are in the know, as they like to say, deep inside the situation, that have told me they think we could hear an announcement as soon as spring about the downtown baseball stadium, where it's going to go. The talk right now is the East Village, which is over by City Hall, close to the Power and Light District, where you would have easy walking access to the Power and Light District and be close to all the entertainment options that downtown Kansas City has to offer. There's a lot of land over there that's very easily acquirable right now, as opposed to some other places in downtown Kansas City, and so it makes for a logical spot to have the new downtown ballpark. But I was told this week that it could be announced as soon as the spring of 2020, and I looked at my calendar and I went, wait a second, that's a couple of months from now.
It's not all that far away.
It's not far away, and so we could be really in the market for that new downtown stadium. I'm told by some folks that John Sherman, the owner, the new owner that will be of the Kansas City Royals come November, is very aggressive with this. And like I've said before, this is a stadium, and I heard it again yesterday, that is expected to be privately financed, and not necessarily privately financed by John Sherman, who's purchasing the ball club, but there are a group of folks in town, call them the town fathers, the town money bags, however you want to describe it, people that have the best interest of Kansas City in mind, that are willing to privately finance this stadium. They're still now obviously working on some details of who exactly is going to be involved, how much they're going to give, all that rigmarole that takes place when you want to build something very big like that. But the talk is it's on the fast track. And I was told we could hear as early as the spring of 2020 as the announcement. Now, I don't know if you have the groundbreaking in the spring of 2020 or anything like that. But, these leases are up in, 12 years now out at the Truman Sports Complex. But the teams can get out of their leases early if the county does not put the $2 or $3 million per year into maintenance out there out at the stadium. And they can leave any time that they want and get out of those contracts. So I think sooner rather than later, we'll be playing downtown baseball in Kansas City. And, again, it's not the plan right now is there's not going to be a dime that you're going to pay. You're not going to pay 1 cent to build that stadium in downtown Kansas City.
Which is the only way
it'll
get done.
Right, well, in this town, in this town. And even if somebody wants to privately finance it, people will complain about it. Go, well, I'm not paying for that.
Or you won't go.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Well, that's
those things.
You, though,
and those things are there. But I'm just saying that to avoid any type of fight, that's the way they have to do it, because it would be a fight.
Yeah. Oh God, yes. And I think, rightfully so, because I mean we're in this, town where you have that state line that divides everything. And I feel for Jackson County. I mean, they're picking up the tab on everything, Josh. I mean, they're picking up the tab on every single thing that gets built in downtown Kansas City, or the airport, or whatever the case may be. Well, not the airport, because that's a user fee. But, whatever the case may be, it feels like Johnson County gets away for free and gets to utilize the stuff, but doesn't have to pay any tax dollars towards that stuff. So you would definitely have a fight, and I could understand that. But it's in the best interest of Kansas City. It's the final piece of the puzzle that is going to tie downtown all together. I mean, we've done such a great job since really, say the year 2000, maybe even a little bit before that. Remember that? In the year 2000, we'll see a downtown stadium. Does anybody even get that reference anymore?
Probably not.
Probably. I would imagine.
I'm too young.
You're too young.
Go to Google.
Yeah, just Google it. Just absolutely Google it. But I
Conan
think
O'Brien, Google, year 2000.
Yes.
Go.
I was going to say Carson, so maybe I'm not even getting the reference, but I remember in the year 2000. But it's the final piece. It's the bow that's going to bring downtown all together. Now, all of a sudden, you got your arena. You've got your entertainment district. You've got a downtown baseball stadium. You've got the Crossroads thriving the way that it is right now. Downtown Kansas City is really hopping. And for a city this size and compared to all the other peer cities out there, hey, we've got ourselves a really good thing going on. So it could happen as soon as the spring, where we get that announcement with a privately funded downtown ballpark in the East Village area over by City Hall. So kind of be on the lookout for that. And, if it doesn't come in the spring, it comes in the summer, whatever it is, we're on the horizon of getting this done and making this happen in Kansas City. And I think it's very important to make this happen, to take us to that next level and to have the ballpark right there and easy access to restaurants and bars and all of that stuff that really bring a city together. If you've ever been to a stadium in a downtown area where there's stuff to do around it, it's just a different vibe. It's very exciting. And so what does that mean for the Chiefs now? now, Josh, I don't know what that means for the Chiefs going forward. I didn't get that deep into a conversation about that, but I can imagine if the Royals end up moving out to downtown, which looks like it's going to happen, they're probably going to have that land available, and maybe you put a parking lot, maybe you put an entertainment district out there like Patriot Place for the Chiefs. Maybe you build an entire new Arrowhead Stadium out there and throw a retractable roof on top of that sucker for the ability to bring bigger concerts, NCAA basketball events, Final Fours, and Super Bowls, and all kinds of great things to Kansas City that we can't get right now. Or maybe you just decide you kind of like Arrowhead the way it is and you do a few more upgrades on there. But the Chiefs will get something out of this, I'm sure, as well. But the good news is the Royals are looking like they are headed downtown, and it looks like it will be a privately financed stadium. So look for an announcement potentially as soon as spring of 2020, which is like, 4 months from now.
Yeah, it's not very far away. Right. It is October the 10th.
Yeah.
Just so we're 10, scoring
11,
at home.
12, 1,
it's
2
within
is
six
February
months.
4. Yeah, it's about 6 months from now,
which is
roughly.
Which will be here in a blur.
Yeah. Yeah, before you know it, they'll be saying, all right, we got a press conference downtown for a major announcement. And you'll kind of know what that is.
Let's shout it out, 69306 on the Protein House Eat With a Purpose text line. Describe the flavor of milk, please.
Oh, wet. I don't know. That's cow, maybe it tastes like. I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah. I don't know what the flavor of milk is. It's just not anything unless you add chocolate or strawberry or some kind of blueberry syrup maybe to it, or maybe a boysenberry.
It's like
heavy
water.
Yeah, probably so. And
my description of it.
Even when I drink milk, which I don't do much anymore, I probably should, but I always drink the skim variety with no fat in it. So yeah, it is. It's like
cloudy
water.
You're gonna break some bones, Fesco.
Yeah, you take a vitamin D pill, you'll
be all right. Is it true that if you breathe the air in St. Louis, you get an STD?
It is true. Yeah, they were named the number one city for STDs again for like the umpteenth year in a row. And so if you go over there, you got to be careful, man. You got to be careful. You're going to come back with something, man. It's like getting off the, I don't know what, the dirty train or whatever in St. Louis, man. It is filthy over there.
When was the last time you had to go to the principal's office?
Grade
school.
Yeah.
I kind of stayed out of there.
I didn't go much. I think I went one time like in third or fourth grade when I fought with Billy May. And other than that.
I think it was some fight over a football or something, or a kickball or something dumb in grade school. I kind of stayed out of that area if I did. I mean, I went to my kids' principal's office like last week.
Yeah.
Said hi and
dropped
off, the latest thing that they left at home.
But I don't even like to look at the principal today.
Yeah. Ooh. I know. I want like very limited conversations, like everything good?
Yeah. I don't want to talk to you.
I feel like it's reflective of you.
Go back to the office. I don't need to see you here.
Bleep Lou Dobbs.
Lou Dobbs?
Wow. Did you say something?
I don't know.
I don't know. $50 is nothing when it's all you have, but it's a fortune if you find it on the sidewalk.
It's true. Yeah, you find 50 bucks on the sidewalk, you feel like you just hit the lottery.
Yeah, $20 bucks in like a pocket of your jeans or something.
Look, I pick up every penny, dime, and nickel that I see on the ground. I don't pass up any kind of money on the ground. So if I find a penny, I'm like, woohoo.
I was very excited. I was going through the overgrown receipt box. I was going to try to balance the books and everything. No
you
good.
You were?
And it's almost tax time. You're going to kind of do that stuff. And I found a $5 bill the other day. I was like so excited. I was like, there's a $5. I got $5. Man. Yeah. I got $5. It's immediately gone.
They're gone. Right out the window.
Sometimes I have to tell myself to stop effing cussing. You sound like an effing idiot.
No, you don't. I mean, they say the people that cuss and use the F word are much more intelligent than people who don't use the F word.
Well,
if you don't believe that, look it up.
Wow.
So you and I are very intelligent human beings, Josh.
I hope they don't build that Hyperloop now. STL will bring all their STDs to KC.
And in like 25 minutes. That is an issue. That's something that I was thinking of as well. If you bring the Hyperloop here, how quickly will the STDs arrive?
What do you think Peter Piper used his peppers for?
He picked a peck of pickled peppers. I think he probably turned them into pickles.
That's a very valid question.
Yeah. I think you eat them, you stuff them. With the new keto diet, you load them up with cream cheese right now, and that's a meal.
My son pointed out to me yesterday that Pop-Tarts are now the phone-shaped food, not bananas.
That is fantastic.
That is absolutely true.
That is great.
Kramer's in, yeah, in the other side of the glass today. That's a Pop-Tart, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of a Pop-Tart, it looked like you're holding up your cell phone. That's exactly right.
That is good. I like that. That is
right.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, you can't do like the hang loose for the phone anymore.
Nobody
either,
knows what that is.
Nobody has a clue. That's funny. That's good. I like that, man. Good job out of your kid.
That's true. It's true. Totally pointed that out. Yeah. All right, we're going to end on that. That's good.
That is really good.
That is today's edition of Shout It Out. Pat's just fine. Thank you. Next.
Fesco in the morning.
This segment brought to you by Broadway Deli, the official deli of 610 Sports Radio in the Crossroads. Open for breakfast, open for lunch. They can handle catering needs as well, breakfast and lunch. Check them out, Broadway Deli, the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. I can't get past that Pop-Tart is a phone now.
No, I know. That's going to be stuck in your head all day, yeah.
It's like just a brilliant observation by your kid.
What flavor Pop-Tart is the best? I would go with red. I think when you don't know what flavor to decide on, you go red. You can't go wrong.
Cinnamon.
Oh, really? That's the correct answer. All right. Kramer?
I fell in love with cookies and cream.
Cookies and cream, huh? All right.
Plain old cinnamon. When in doubt.
When in doubt, so go cinnamon.
Eat it cinnamon any time is of day. Good.
Is any it? Time of day.
That was a brown sugar one.
I don't know that I've ever cinnamoned on the
cinnamon
Pop-Tart.
Brown sugar.
I don't eat a lot of Pop-Tarts. Do you toast yours or you eat them raw?
Depends.
People freeze them.
Freeze them?
Yeah, I don't understand it. I don't understand.
I've never tried it.
Wow.
I might.
Maybe. Keep them fresh. So you eat them raw or cooked?
Yeah. Sometimes I'll toast them. Sometimes I'll just put them in the microwave for like 10 seconds and be done with it.
Okay. Yeah. But sometimes you'll just eat them right out of the wrapper.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Yeah, it's not a problem with that either.
You are nine.
I have to hide them so that the kids don't get them.
That's right.
Pat's checking another box, Fesco.
Oh, he is? Yep. What did he do now?
Tough guy.
Oh, okay. It seems like we create more boxes every week for Patrick Mahomes, right?
But I like to see this, right? Play through pain, play through injuries, not get knocked out. It feels like it would take a lot to get him to not be a part of a football game.
I think so.
Which is good.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, he understands he's got a limited amount of these things over the course of his career, so he wants to play in as many as possible. And when you're having fun like these guys are having right now, you know, you want to get out there and play. But you also have to have that other side where you say, all right, is this going to affect you going forward? Is it best to sit down for a little bit and take a breather and rest this ankle, or are you going to be able to go out there and not re-injure that thing? You know, there's so many different questions that you need to ask. You need kind of that conscience to be his guide out there, because he's going to go out there and play. He could be out there in a cast and on crutches, and he's going to go out there and try to play in a football game. And that's where you need, you know, the coach and the trainer to come and go, all right, hang on a second here. Let's make sure everything is okay before we put you out there in a game in October that could prevent you from playing in a game in December and January when we need you the most.
But ankle, no big deal.
I actually feel pretty good today. I feel like after the game, I mean, it was sore after the game, but it's feeling pretty good today. So I'm glad to be able to go out there and practice on it and get it moving around and stuff like that. But it's definitely, I feel like I'll be fine playing and moving around and still doing what I need to do to win. I mean, it's not perfect, I guess to say that, but it's good enough that I feel like I can still run, cut off of it, and do all that type of stuff.
And he's still in the mode where he's just happy to go out and practice.
Yeah, just happy to be there, man. I'm 24 years old. I like practicing.
Man, I was happy just to be able to get out there to practice today.
All these other veterans are looking around going, dude, why?
I'll be back on Sunday,
man. Maybe I'll be at the walkthrough on Friday, but I'm not going through that. But that's the difference between Patrick Mahomes and you know, everybody else. I mean, that's why Patrick Mahomes is a winner.
You go ahead and put me as probable, but I ain't practicing until Thursday, at least.
I'll see you. Wednesday, screw that. That's a heavy day. I'm out on this one. But that's why he's so good, man. That's why he's able to make the plays. That's why he's able to take his game to the next level, because he's always willing to put in that extra work. I mean, he's an amazing, amazing person when you think about it that way. The guy goes out there and he's got a bum ankle, probably should have taken the day off yesterday, but he's going to go out there, he's going to be with his teammates, he's going to practice, he's going to get better, because he knows it didn't work out so good last week and things were not good for this offense. And he knows there's a lot of work that still needs to be done to get to that next level, especially this week playing against Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans, which are coming off an amazing game. And now all of a sudden they're the darlings of the NFL. Everybody's in love with what the Houston Texans are doing right now. So Patrick Mahomes knows this is a big week for his team, and he's going to be there and he's going to be part of it. And that's why you love having him as your quarterback, because he always has the best interest of the team and getting better on top of his mind, as opposed to saying, "Nah, I got a bum ankle. I'm a little sore. I'm going to sit this one out," when I don't think anybody would care if he did sit one out. But he wants to be out there getting better, and you love that in an athlete.
This week, they care.
Yeah. Well,
people this week.
This week.
Don't you sense it? We're all a little on edge this week.
I sense a very, like, this has been a different week.
It's been depressing.
A very depressing week at the beginning of the week, and I don't think people...
There's not a lot of heat yet on this game.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a little probably trepidation about it.
Of course.
That Houston's coming in with a little something, and you're kind of a little defensive.
Yeah.
A little defensive.
Have they figured us out? People are, you know, yeah. It's been a real slow buildup to where we are. Now, I'm sure once Saturday gets here and Friday gets here, people will be excited. But we talked about it last week with Fat Mahomes' comment on Facebook where he said, man, I feel like a little kid. It's Monday and I'm ready for the next Sunday. Like, you're not getting that sense this week like we had. And I understand why a little bit, because it's Kansas City and we're used to having the rug pulled out from underneath us when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs. And we're used to, you know, losing games that we're not supposed to lose. And we're waiting for that shoe to drop. And I think people are still kind of in that mindset right now with this football team, because that's the way we've been conditioned over the last 50 years to be like, you know, Charlie Brown running after that football and having Lucy pull it away from us and falling on our asses. And so I think people are kind of like starting to feel that way. And I don't think you should feel that way. Losses happen in the NFL. I mean, the Patriots lose 3 or 4 games every year, 2 games every year. You're not going to go undefeated.
I thought they were always.
No, they did in 2007, Josh. No. 12 years ago is the last time anybody went undefeated over the course of a regular NFL season.
So it'll be okay.
So losing a game is not the end of the world. Were there some warts that were shown? Absolutely there were some warts that were shown. But we've got ourselves a really good coaching staff, a Super Bowl winning defensive coordinator, a head football coach that's one of the best of all time. I'm confident this week. I feel great this week going into this game against the Houston Texans, because I feel like the Kansas City Chiefs are the better football team. They have the better head coach. They have the home crowd, and they've got something to play for now. They've got a little, you know, kind of pee and vinegar in them right now because of the way that they lost that game to the Indianapolis Colts. And I think the Houston Texans are probably going to come in riding high. We just put up 55. We're going to go to Kansas City and take care of business. I think the Chiefs are going to put them in for a rude awakening this week and really slap them early, get up fast, and run away. Excitement level back, man. I want it to be where it was last week, where everybody was jacked and ready to go. And this week, I just feel like everybody's just kind of meandering towards Friday and not as excited as we should be for this football team. It's a great football team right now. Let's go, man. Let's get excited. Let's get fired up for this game on Sunday.
They're going to need almost that pregame speech, right?
Do you need to give it to him?
It may not happen until you kind of hit the field on Sunday.
Yeah,
I feel like it's just such a slow build to this one that it's taken everybody a little bit of time. We'll hear from Travis Kelce coming up in a little bit at 7 o'clock about,
and what he said, I'm kind of concerned about
that. There was a hangover for them too.
Yeah,
hopefully they're through it. I don't think all Chiefs fans are through it.
No, they're clearly not. There's not as much fun being had on Facebook. I saw this week on Facebook alone, Josh, 2 super fans, our guy, the Amish Outlaw, and Daniel Nelson, who's a super fan. You see his face painted all the time. He's on billboards around the town. Like, both of those guys are like, I'm done with my super fan days. I got to go on to other things. Maybe it's some personal stuff that they're dealing with. And right now, but I'm like, man, I hope we're not doing this because there's a loss on the books. Like, I hope people aren't losing faith in this team. I hope people are still believers in this football team, because just because you suffered one loss to it, I think a pretty good Colts team led by Frank Reich, who I think is going to be that next great head coach in this league. Man, just because you suffered one loss, it's not the end of the world. I mean, it's no reason to feel down in the dumps about this team. So get fired up, man. Get going. Get ready. This team needs you this week more than ever.
Pat Mahomes knows the offense needs to pick it up.
Obviously, we only put up 13 points, that's not a good enough effort to win in this league. So for us, they had a good game plan. They got stops when they needed to get stops. I feel like we moved the ball a little bit, but we couldn't get it into the red zone to get those scores. They played good as a defense, and we got to be better, and we can't have penalties, and we can't turn the ball over whenever we get our chances.
Certainly didn't sound like Mahomes down in the dumps yesterday, so I was encouraged by that. Like, he was like kind of bouncing around, ready to go, excited to go to practice. Knows they didn't perform more than they needed to perform, but didn't sound down.
No.
So if you take your cue from your quarterback, he's fine.
He's good.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's do this, man. Let's go out there and win. And like I said on Monday, and I'll continue to say, like, all of the things that they had go wrong for them in that Indianapolis Colts game are still very fixable things. I mean, the injuries are going to take care of themselves. Guys will eventually get back. But, I mean, penalties that you had, you can correct those penalties. You can correct turnovers. You can correct things that went wrong in that game against the Indianapolis Colts. And everybody has a bad game. Everybody has one of those down games. Everybody has a stinker that they lay. No matter how good a team you are, you're going to have one of those stinkers. And so I think everything that went wrong in that game against Indianapolis is very correctable, and you can get it done this week against the Houston Texans. Just go out there and play the style of football that you played for the last 25 games, and you'll be fine.
Coming up at 7, Kelsey says, I love you. Clayton Kershaw is the most maddening superstar. He blows it last night. Mm-hmm. Dodgers lose game 5 of the division series to the Nationals. 7-3-10, Howie Kendrick, the grand slam as the hero. But the story was Clayton Kershaw. The Dodgers use him in the 8th, up 2 runs, and he gives up back-to-back home runs to tie the game.
I had one job to do, just get 3 outs, and got 1 out, and didn't get the other 2, and they went over the fence, cost us the game right there. So it's a terrible feeling. You know, there's no excuses, just didn't make pitches, and guy hit it over the fence twice. So.
Twice.
Yeah. He did not have one home run. He had two home runs.
Guy hit it over the fence, you know, twice.
And on back-to-back pitches.
His manager, Dave Roberts, says, I'll go down with Kershaw. You are.
He's a pro, you know, probably the best pitcher of our generation. And for him to make himself available tonight and got us out of a big spot right there. And, you know, it just didn't work out. You know, there's always going to be second guessing when things don't work out. But, you know, I'll take my chances any day on Clayton. And it just didn't work out right there.
Yeah, you got to say that as the manager.
Yeah.
He helped us out of a big spot there.
Well, in the 7th inning, he got that 1 out.
Yeah. Okay. That was a big spot, I guess.
Do you feel responsibility for this loss?
Sure. I mean, if the blame falls on me, I've got no problem with it. You know, I feel that, you know, my job is to put guys in the best position to have success. And if it doesn't work out, there's always going to be second guessing. And I got no problem, you know, wearing the brunt of that. That's okay.
Okay. Well, then you're going to wear the brunt of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You went to Clayton Kershaw, who's got an ERA 2 runs worse in the postseason than he does in the regular. He's fantastic in the regular season.
Great regular season
fantastic
pitcher.
Fantastic in the regular season. 2.44 ERA for his career.
Unbelievable, right? Unbelievable ERA. 4.43 in the postseason.
Yeah.
In 168 innings postseason. That's not a 2-inning postseason career or something like
I think
that.
Last time was a 32nd appearance in the postseason.
Yeah, he's had an entire
32nd postseason appearance last night.
Yeah, he's had an entire year of postseason play under his belt. I mean, with all the postseason games he's played, he's actually played a year longer than what his career states because of how many games, how many innings, and how much time the Dodgers have spent in the postseason. But he's
The team record during his playoff appearances, 15-17.
Yeah, that's not good.
His starts, he's 13-12.
Yeah, that's an
that's
average
not greatest
pitcher
of your generation. No, it's not clutch.
No, it's not.
And he does not have the clutch gene, which is, man, it's when you got it, you got it. When you don't, you're just scratching your head.
Yeah,
because the Dodgers have weathered this for far too many years.
I mean, he's the Alex Rodriguez of pitching. I mean, the guy's really good in the regular season. Then come the postseason, you do absolutely nothing. I think
postseason planet bad pitching.
Yeah, planet bad pitching. No question, man. Like you've got to come through in the postseason. And we use that term great so much in professional sports. If Dave Roberts said he's a great regular season pitcher, I'm not going to argue that. He is a great regular season pitcher. But the way that he's performed in the postseason does not make him a great pitcher. It makes him a great regular season pitcher and a very poor postseason pitcher. And that's the difference between, you know, Hall of Fame type guys and guys that are on the fringe. And you have to think, you know, with Clayton Kershaw, you've got to factor in that postseason stuff when you're considering him for the Hall of Fame. Now, I think if his career ends today, he probably gets into the Hall of Fame. But that big asterisk is going to be, boy, he stunk in the playoffs. Like, he was downright awful in the postseason. And I would rather have a guy who's not as flashy but knows how to win than have a guy who's flashy that doesn't know how to win. And I think that's where the Tom Brady comparisons come in and people talking about who do you want to win one big game. You got a lot of guys out there with a lot of flash right now that are really great quarterbacks in the NFL, But Tom Brady's the biggest winner in the NFL. He's the biggest winner we've seen in professional sports in the history of professional sports. I want a guy like Tom Brady. I want a guy like Derek Jeter. I want a guy like Big Shot Bob Orry to come in that, you know, when the game is on the line, is going to hit a shot. You know, I don't want a guy like Russell Westbrook. I don't want a guy like Clayton Kershaw. I don't want a guy like, I'll just throw it out there, Deshaun Watson, for argument's sake, a guy who doesn't win in the postseason. I want a guy who is going to get me to the postseason. Maybe he's not as flashy. Maybe he's not as sexy. Maybe he's not as stat padding as some of these other guys. But when it matters most, he knows how to win. Nobody knows how to win more than Tom Brady in professional sports. And Clayton Kershaw is starting to fall on that list and is probably headlining that list right now of guys that know how to lose better than anybody else in big situations. And you can sit here and blame Dave Roberts. That move at that point in time, it's game five. You're putting your best players out there to try to win that game, to move on to the next series. Your player has to go out there and produce. And Clayton Kershaw didn't produce. And if I'm Dave Roberts going forward, I don't know that I can use Clayton Kershaw in the postseason in any big type of spots. I would consider leaving him off postseason rosters moving forward.
610 Sports Radio, KCSP Kansas City, WDAF HD2 Kansas City, radio.com sports station. Your chance to win a pair of tickets to the Hollywood Casino 400. Pair of tickets on the line. That is our 7 o'clock hour prize. Pretty good one.
Yeah, it's a nice one.
The next time you hear this drop.
He did what in his cup?
Be caller number
12.
12 to 913-576-7610. And you can win a pair of Hollywood Casino 400 tickets. You mentioned leaving him off the roster. I know it'd be tough, but I'm at the point I'd trade him.
Yeah, but you got $31 million for the next 2 years. It's going to be tough for somebody to pick that up.
And it'd be hard to get away from because you're like, the guy's so good. You know, you as a fan, probably as a front office, where you're like, man, he's going to break through at some point.
Sometime
he's going to have that crowning achievement, that crowning moment, and it will all be worth it. You're like, will it?
I mean, we've had 168 innings of non-crown achieving moments for him.
I'd deal him to an American League team, so he couldn't bite you.
Yeah,
and take the World Series,
he bites your ass. That would be the thing right there, right?
Maybe you wouldn't make it anyway. I just hope you wouldn't make it anyway that year, and you go, ah, good for him, and move on. But I'd probably consider that if I'm them. Travis Kelce. Looking for the bounce back this week. Certainly was not his best game.
No.
Last week. Certainly was not his best sideline demeanor last week.
Right.
Getting in the altercation with his offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy. But he says now it's all good.
I mean, we're good. We've moved on as a team from last game. And you guys got to understand, me and Coach Bieniemy have a very close relationship. I love him. He's helped me out tremendously as a person, as a professional, and I'm sure he'll keep doing that throughout the rest of my career. And just what happened on the sideline, I mean, sometimes football, you get a little heated with your brothers or your coaches, and, you know, sometimes you just got to rally the family together and let everybody know we're in this together to, you know, win a game. And sure enough, we were able to bring it together there. And I mean, you guys saw me hug him afterwards. I mean, I love that guy. And that'll never change. And I appreciate him always being on my tail to get me going.
Now, the better part of the story would be had you come back and won the game and you had a big catch or whatever and kind of turned it around. Because, yeah, those sideline altercations are going to happen at times, but you can't let them be those frustrating ones that tear you down. And then for Eric Bieniemy, hey, hats off to the guy for getting after people.
Sure.
If he got after Travis Kelce, the point that Travis Kelce snapped, that's not good on Travis. But it's fine on Eric Bieniemy.
Mm-hmm.
Like you go ahead and get after somebody when they need a little prod.
Right.
I applaud Eric Bieniemy for being able, the guy that can stand up and do that. Chew them a little bit when they deserve it. Now Travis got to be able to take it better than you handled the other day, and it would have been a better ending to the story had you won the game and you came up with a big play to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think that's the moral of the story, and I think that's going to be the overarching, you know, kind of story that we tell when Travis Kelce's career is over. He doesn't do well in adverse situations, Josh. I mean, he's very much like Clayton Kershaw. I mean, Clayton Kershaw doesn't perform well on the big stage, and when Travis has the opportunity to perform well on the big stage, we don't see him perform all that well on the big stage. I think he has 2 postseason touchdowns. You remember the big drop against Pittsburgh. You remember New England basically shutting him down last year. Now, he did have the one touchdown. He had 3 catches for 23 yards in that game. And when they needed him to be big, he wasn't big. And I think for some reason, And I look back at some of these stats, and in those games that they lost last year, the big primetime games that everybody's talking about with Patrick Mahomes, Travis had really one good game, and that was against the Los Angeles Rams. 10 catches, had a nice game that day against the Los Angeles Rams. But when the lights get bright, man, I need more out of Travis Kelce. I do. I can't have him dropping passes against the Indianapolis Colts, getting penalties on the offensive side, and then going after his coach because the coach is challenging him a little bit and saying, your play is not, you know, where it needs to be. Your play is not where it needs to be in this game for us to win. And I'm sure Eric Bieniemy probably said a little bit more than that. But Travis has to step it up in big-time situations. I mean, especially now with Sammy Watkins out, the offensive line banged up, with Tyreek Hill out. I don't care if people want to make excuses that he's getting double-teamed or whatever the case may be. Big players play big when the situations need to be, you know, played. And Travis Kelce, you know, for the most part, doesn't play that big in those big-time situations. He's really good at noon on a Sunday. But when the lights are bright, I don't know if he gets into his own head or whatever the case may be.
And
he just doesn't play as well in the prime time.
And it might not just be him, but, I mean, you look at his postseason in the two wins, very good.
Yeah.
Like, his two 100-yard games, both Chiefs wins.
Sure. Okay. Absolutely.
But what did you do in the losses?
Right.
Right.
Nothing.
Not a lot. Had these touchdowns you mentioned, but just 23 yards.
Right.
Had a touchdown in the loss to Tennessee, 66 yards.
Right.
77 yards, no score in the Pittsburgh.
And the big drop, like, in the Pittsburgh game,
Game had 23. The two times they faced New England in the postseason, he's had 23 yards.
Yeah. You got to do better than that. This team needs more. Like, they need him this week to be big. They just do. And so, and I don't have a problem with him and Bieniemy doing it. Like, I don't have a problem with Travis Kelce fighting with Eric Bieniemy at all. In fact, I applaud Travis Kelce for doing that on the sidelines, because we should be doing more of that in America today. Not necessarily strangling each other and fighting with each other, but having it out with each other instead of just passively, aggressively saying things and holding it in. Let it out and move on like they did. Like, they got into it and they hugged and they moved on, and they're cool now. And they're that, and I'm good with that. Like, people are like, oh man, Travis Kelce got in. I'm like, yeah, I don't necessarily consider that an issue. Like, I don't have a problem that he fought with Eric Bieniemy. Both of those guys were heated. Travis wasn't playing well. Bieniemy was mad that Travis wasn't playing well. They said their piece, and they moved on.
He saw the same thing I saw.
Yeah.
And then probably you saw that something was going on with Travis Kelce.
Right. Something wasn't right on Sunday.
He did not look right before that altercation. The body language wasn't great. He had kind of a questioning look in his I don't know what was going
right
on. But Eric Bieniemy saw it and got after him a little bit.
Sure. And I don't have a problem with the coach getting after him. That's your job to get after him. Hopefully motivate these guys.
I felt like I was in the same boat.
Yeah.
So you go, EB.
Yeah, I have no issue with that.
Now, they've moved on not only from that, but moved on from the loss, apparently. But there was a hangover that Kelce told us about yesterday.
Just focus. I mean, you could feel the building was kind of drained yesterday. That means everybody cares. And that's all it is. We just got to light a torch, get a little angry, and attack the next game with more aggression and more purpose than we did the last one.
Those are pointed comments right there by Travis. The building was drained yesterday. Okay, I get that. You understand you lost a game. It's draining, but you can't be down. You just can't be down. It's game five. I mean, it's not the end of the year. It's not the Dodgers last night where the building's going to be drained for a while. It's game five. You got
to
bounce back.
We can do that. They, as athletes, programmed to not be
in that
mode.
To not be drained, to not be upset, to move on to the next one and figure out a way to get that done. Play the ending of that cut for me, would you please, where Travis Kelce talked at the end, the second point that he made, because...
Just focus. I mean, you could feel the building was kind of drained yesterday. That means everybody cares. And that's all it is. We just got to light a torch, get a little angry, and attack the next game with more aggression and more purpose than we did the last one.
See, it sounds like they took the Colts for granted.
They were flat.
They took the Colts for granted and believed that because, hey, we're the Kansas City Chiefs. Everybody loves us. Patrick Mahomes is the MVP. We'll be okay. We'll be fine. It's Indianapolis. It's Jacoby Brissett. We beat them in the playoffs and all that stuff. It sure as hell sounds like to me that they didn't take the Indianapolis Colts very seriously. And that's okay. I understand that. I get it. But I'm glad they also got that wake-up call, because I think that maybe they needed that wake-up call. I think there was a little too much belief in their hype. You know what I'm saying, Josh? Like, oh, okay, we're the Chiefs. We're Patrick Mahomes. We're going to score. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to have our way with you. And it sure sounds like what he said there. We've got to attack this week better than we did last week against the Indianapolis Colts. And it sure sounds like the Kansas City Chiefs had a wake-up call. And I'm not one of these guys who likes losses and thinks they're good or anything of that nature. But if you can take things away from a loss and build off of some of the things that you had in that loss, then it is a good thing. And if the thing that they're taking away from that loss is we took this team for granted and we just showed up and played because we thought we could win and beat anybody out there because we're starting to buy into the hype, and they realize that today in October as opposed to December or January, then that's okay because they can build off of that. They can learn off of that. Hopefully going forward, they're not taking anybody for granted, and they go out there and they continue to kick everybody's ass that's on their schedule.
Jamie and Paola, the winner this hour of the 7 o'clock hour prize, Hollywood Casino 400 tickets. We give stuff away at 7, 8, and 9 o'clock just for listening. We check in with Ben Maller, Fox Sports Radio, based in L.A., where one of the baseball meltdowns happened. We'll see if he's okay next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.